Right, you guys, it's 7 o'clock. I call the February 20th, 2024 regular board meeting of Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and state the time.
It's 7 p.m. Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Schneider?
Yes.
Commissioner Spector?
Here.
President Spain?
Here. Consent agenda items A through C are routine. Does any commissioner want any item pulled from the consent agenda items? Okay. I entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda items as presented.
So moved. Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. All right. So we're going to start up this evening's agenda with a presentation on the renovation of the racquet courts. So thank you, Kyle. Looking forward to your presentation.
Thank you, President Spain, and thank you everyone for joining us here tonight for our solid discussion on pickleball courts. So at the January board meeting, staff presented information regarding the four racquet courts, racquet court locations due for major renovations over the next 2 years. The slide and information from that presentation can be found on the partnership website, but certainly if the board needs to refer back to any of the slides here tonight, we have the ability to do that as well. Staff is developing construction drawings and bid documents for all four locations currently, but ultimately we do need direction on which two locations to advance this year. So hopefully the information tonight will help better inform that decision-making process. The information that was requested by the board at the January meeting was related to comparable districts and their situations, noise mitigation options that those districts have utilized, as well as what impact the board's decision potentially could have on an OSLAD application, OSLAD grant application. Before we jump into that follow-up discussion, just wanted to bring up again our current racquet court inventory and our service levels. The NRPA standard for tennis courts is, for our size community, is one court per 2,805 residents. The standard for pickleball courts is one court for every 3,252 residents. We currently have 14 total tennis courts, 10 of which are standalone dedicated tennis courts, four of which share lines with pickleball courts, two of which are at Shelton, two of which are at West. It's also worth noting that the Watts courts are lined for pickleball, but the nets were removed when the standalone removable pickleball courts were installed at Weinberg last spring. On the pickleball side, we have 12 current pickleball courts. Six of those are the removable courts at Weinberg, and six are sharing lines with tennis courts, two at Shelton and four at West. So it's worth noting that while we do exceed the standard for pickleball courts, none of those are true, dedicated, permanent pickleball courts, which is really the crux of our discussion here. So jumping into the information about other districts, we're going to start with the comparison that we made. We definitely not the only community that has or potentially may have pickleball courts within a neighborhood area. We looked at five nearby communities that recently added pickleball courts to parks within neighborhoods with close proximity to homes. The five sites we investigated were Cliff Park in Glenview, Deer Park in Vernon Hills, Danny Cunnett Park in Highland Park, Community Playfield in Wilmette, and Woodland Park in Park Ridge. These sites had anywhere from 6 to 16 pickleball courts, had at least 15 homes within a 500-foot radius of the courts, and with the exception of Woodland Park, all had tennis courts on the same site. The two locations we felt most closely represented our situations were Deer Path in Vernon Hills and Cliff Park in Glenview. This is given the number of homes within those 500 to 300-foot radiuses. The pictures on the left side, top left, is Deer Path Park in Vernon Hills. You can see the orange radius represents 500 feet from center court. White radius represents 300 feet from center court. And you can see the homes on the west and slightly northwest side of the course. Bottom left is Flick Park in Glenview, again showcasing the 500 to 300 foot radiuses, homes to the northwest and southwest. Note at Flick Park there are several homes immediately to the left or west of the pickleball courts that are within 125 feet. Speaking with staff at these districts, they do have the same discussions and same concerns regarding the demand for pickleball, the concerns about pickleball noise. Both these districts and four out of the five districts we looked into have installed noise-reducing panels from Acoustiblock on the section of the fencing facing the homes. They all have a very similar way of describing the products changes the sound from a pop to more of a thud and reduces it slightly, but it does not eliminate the noise, and I think that's a recognition we have to have. So we put together a neighboring court summary similar to what we did for our home courts in the January meeting. As you can see on the far right column, again, all the locations except for Park Ridge have put in the acoustic block fence fabric. It is worth noting that Community Playfield in Wilmette and Woodland Park and Park Ridge were completed late last year, so they have not yet gone through a full year of usage and community feedback. Just going down the list, Flick Park has two dedicated tennis courts, six pickleball courts, and Deer Path, four tennis, six pickleball. Dan Cunnett, six tennis, 16 pickleball. Community Playfield, three tennis, six pickleball, and Woodland Park, zero tennis, and six pickleball. The fourth column from the left, you can see the number of homes within those 300 and 500 foot radiuses. Again, Flick Park and Deer Path were the two that most closely felt most closely reflected our current situation that we're discussing. And all of them have dedicated parking lots at the locations. The court visitor section, this is the same placer AI data that we provided to the board at the January meeting for our locations. It's worth noting that Flick Park, Deer Path, and Danny Cummins, as well as Woodland Park, all had significantly higher court visitors compared against our locations. This is primarily likely due to the size of these locations, the number of pickleball courts that have been installed, as well as the size of the communities. So the noise mitigation options. We know that pickleball produces a louder noise than tennis. We know that it has a higher frequency of impact. And we can help mitigate that noise through the use of tightly fenced hedgerows, as well as noise reduction panels like acoustic block. However, we just want to be clear that, we cannot eliminate noise, we can only help to mitigate it. So the reason why I kind of hammer home is it's mitigation, not elimination. In addition to some noise reduction panels and plantings, while not really a noise reducing option, one way to potentially control the timing for play would be installing timed locking gates on the course. Just understanding that doing so would come obviously with an additional cost, and also if you're locking the gates to a location that has tennis and pickleball, you would be locking out both tennis and pickleball during those off hours. A little bit of information on the acoustic block fence product, which was installed at four of the five neighboring communities that we looked into. The manufacturer claims that the use of the panels reduced the pickleball noise by 10 to 12 decibels. Measuring at 100 feet at 70 decibels, this would equate to about a 12 to 17% reduction in pickleball noise. Again, this is the product manufacturer's claim. And speaking with the neighboring districts about these panels, they all had a very similar response that it does help reduce the noise, but it does not eliminate it. And again, it changes it from more of a pop, or less of a pop to more of a thud type of noise. In addition to the acoustic block fence product, as previously stated, we would also look to install tightly planted hedgerows, our lines to add an additional layer of noise mitigation.
Is that in the previous picture? Yes. Is that acoustic block fencing that's up there?
Yes, I'm sorry. So yeah, the two pictures are the product. Okay. It comes in green or black. It's a reinforced fiber that's tightly woven, very similar to Windstream, but much thicker, provides some sound absorption qualities. At the previous meeting, it was suggested to look at other locations for pickleball courts for a variety of reasons. We are not in a position to build new courts. First of all, our current park properties do not have situations where there's not neighbors within a 500 foot radius or closer, so that opportunity doesn't currently present itself. And really, throughout all of Glencoe, regardless of land ownership, there's very few opportunities to have properties that don't have neighbors within 500 feet of 500 feet of the property. Additionally, at Tacus specifically, as you can see, there's neighbors within the 300 and 500 foot radiuses, and Tacus is a 90,000 square foot community center that houses full day daycare, athletics, fitness programming, as well as baseball. So we don't have the capacity to absorb even more in terms of having a pickleball court itself. And finally, regarding West and a potential OZLET grant application, we feel it's important for the board to understand the decision implications regarding the potential OZLET application. As we all know, the Hazlett project has gone through two rounds of community input in which the plan showed two dedicated pickleball courts. The school district is supportive and in favor of installing pickleball courts at this location. The school district does, however, own the eastern two-thirds of the courts and would need the two tennis courts to remain in place. And so in terms of the Hazlett grant application considerations, our application potentially could get some additional points by having the first dedicated permanent pickleball courts being installed at this location. If we were to install pickleball courts, say, west this year, it would detract from our application in the fall by not being able to showcase it as a new amenity at this location. Furthermore, if we are to do pickleball courts anywhere right now, there is the possibility and likely chance that it would reduce our application strength by not being able to highlight it as the first in the community. So just want to make sure that there's an understanding with ongoing discussions about applying for West Hazlett, that how we should potentially factor in the decisions here today and how it could impact the application itself. That
okay. So we're going to go ahead and move to matters for the public at this time, since I would guess that many of you are here to discuss this topic. So I want to remind you all that it is our practice not to address questions at this time, but we do take comments under advisement. And the comments are limited to 3 minutes per person, and we hold you to that 3 minutes. So if there's anybody who would like to go up to the microphone and make a comment to the board at this time, welcome.
Anybody? If you do, you just go right up to the microphone.
I can talk for a minute of the short board I had in place, and opposed to converting the shuttle park pickleball, and I'm sorry, tennis courts, pickleball courts. I was just wondering, I know I've talked to some neighbors, and I wonder what kind of response that you received at this point from neighbors in that area.
So it is not our practice to address questions, but we have received, in addition to comment at this meeting, we have received a number of emails from neighbors throughout the community and folks, so we have gotten input from.
Well, are you distributing those comments to the public?
They're addressed to the board, and I think that they're under the public record.
Yeah,
they're public
record. Been, any emails that come in have been distributed to the board.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we get copies of that then?
You can just email me and I'll be happy to provide you those.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Nicole Downey. I live at 655 Greenwood. I'm across from Rome, Berlin. You guys heard from me last month about my thoughts on keeping the Berlin Park as a tennis-focused park, so I won't reiterate in detail a lot of those points, but I did want to address some of the soundproofing products that were presented in light of that. As I had mentioned last month, our park faces directly the fronts of 22 properties, and the soundproofing products that are available are pretty unsightly. I know you guys are looking for the best possibility, but it essentially creates like a big black box in the center of a very highly visible park. In my opinion, central, with the school, the sports, there's special events like the movies and the concerts and the kindergarten kickoff in the summer. Plus, everyone who drives through from town, it's a really busy park. I would say after like the beach and Gulf, I consider Central like the third most iconic park kind of in town, which you can call our parks iconic. And I have some concerns about how this affects the beauty of the front of 22 people's properties, plus does it represent Glencoe in its best light to have a black box in the center of one of our highly visible parks in town? So that's just kind of an additional point that I wanted to bring to this group. plus my concerns from last month. So thank you very much for your time.
Hi, I'm Betsy Rasha and I live on Jackson Avenue. I have no prepared remarks tonight, but I am a big pickleball fan. We organized a large group of primarily women who have been playing pickle at Watts. I love Watts. I said, what's here from there? I'm a big fan of the board figuring out some way to get dedicated pickleball courts. I appreciate your efforts. I appreciate your thoughtfulness in accommodating neighbors who live around the courts, but pickleball is here to stay. There are so many enthusiastic players, and we would love you to figure out a way to make this happen. Thanks.
I am Debbie Dresner. I live on Sheridan Road near Lakefront Park, and I am a former tennis player and a pickleball convert. And I share my neighbor's view that pickleball is here to stay, and I think that as a community, I appreciate everything that the park district is doing to try to accommodate both the neighbors and the community. But pickleball is like a way of life, and what I found is that it's not only for my peers, but it's intergenerational. And the way the sport is going, it's going to be something that's not just something that's here now for a certain generation, let's say. The sport is attracting younger and younger people. So as we're doing planning for the community, especially as we're looking at the park district here, I realize there's parking and whatnot concerns, but this is a sport, it's a family sport, it's a young people's sport, it's going to be a Olympic sport. So I just want to do keep that in mind, that this isn't short-term planning, this is long-term planning, and appreciate everything that the Park District is doing to accommodate it. I would love you to be able to accommodate it on days like today in the winter when I try to play pickleball and I talked to three different people here to try to schedule a court, and the gym was empty when it wasn't being used, and I went to Central School and played with a friend without a net. It was really quite crazy. So I just like to keep in mind that, especially with global warming and whatnot, that there are nets and things. I don't know why things can't be, why there can't be some nets outdoors, whether it's tennis or pickleball, for people to be able to utilize this sport all year round, indoors and outdoors. So just bring that to your attention. Thank you.
Any further comments? Thank you. So at this point, I would like to open it up to the board members to ask Kyle any questions about his presentation. Or any further comments? I think that basically what we're looking for, as you can see up here, is consensus on what direction we're going to be heading this year. So as you know, we're looking to resurface and redline at least two of the locations out of the four that we've been discussing this year. And just kind of given the considerations with the OSLED grants and the soundproofing, I'd like to hear your thoughts on, you know, these discussion points and what you think we should move ahead with.
Well, I was successfully convinced at our last discussion that going after the OSLAD money is a good thing. So I struggle sometimes making sure that we have both the financial resources to expand upon the incredible recreational activities we have, as well as how we talked about ensuring that you have the bandwidth, quite frankly, put together all of the plans that we have. So, I don't mind waiting.
But
sound like, but I'd love to hear what others say. I have a feeling Stephanie has some comments. So I will find on Stephanie is anxiously waiting to push the green button.
I've already used this before, I'd say. And what are the other things? We're talking about central, shelf, and left, and right. Correct? Okay.
Late part is off.
Bush is done, yeah.
My view is that I'm definitely going to ask my grant. I know that won't be until next year, so I would do West and West next year, or, okay, so next year, 2 years from now, right?
The application timeline for an outlet would be this summer or fall,
uh-huh.
And then we would look to line the project up for next
spring.
Okay. So I would do Central and Shelton first. I would put Nicobella Shelton and then wait till spring until after the decision for WAP so that we don't cause any issue with that in our grant, and then do WAP and WAP together. That's my idea.
So Stephanie, you're of the opinion that we should put pickleball at the WAP course instead of Watts and West instead of Shelton and West?
No, Shelton and West. But I'm saying, like, because we have to pick two and two, and West has to be delayed. So I would do West and West, and I would do Central and Shelton, and do Pickleball and Shelton, and Pickleball.
Even though that could potentially reduce the likelihood of getting the outlet grant at West?
Not if you wait until fall.
So I would just caution them from a timeline standpoint. So the application typically is due in the end of September. If we were to wait to do construction at any site to put pickleball until, say, realistically, end of October, November, the courts wouldn't be completed, certainly wouldn't be color-coded until the following spring anyways. So I don't think we would necessarily gain any real additional playing time, if that makes sense. If we have to wait until October to do any work, we wouldn't have a playable surface this year.
It's better than waiting a whole other full cycle though, and not committing to courts now, because otherwise the option is just not doing anything next year for pickleball, which I don't think is good for the community, so that's why I'm saying that.
Excuse me, can people use the microphones? It's hard to hear in the audience.
Can you pull that one? So you might have to get yours a little closer to you. So what you're saying is that you want Watts and Central as tennis. Is that correct? It's tennis only, Watts and Central?
Well, yeah, if you don't have to. You know, right. I would like to think about that. Yeah, I would.
And then Shelton, I'm sorry, that's a little too loud.
Shelton and Watts. Knowing that, I understand the issue with the bad, like, I don't want to, you know, cause not to get it because of that. But so, if we wait, that's another 2 years without.
It's actually only a year. So let me explain the timing. So if
sorry,
we.
Sorry, please, before you use my timing, just make sure there's no change to the summer courts at Weinberg. Is that right? So what you're saying.
Right, we're going to still have the tennis courts at Weinberg.
That is a given throughout this whole period, no matter when. If we do outside, if we don't do outside, we will still have the temporary slash seasonal course.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to think that we're going with nothing.
No. Yeah. Our plan is to keep the Weinberg seasonal courts up in forever, maybe, as long as those courts last. And those are, we plan to have those up May 1st until through October. Probably it's, I think, September 29th or something we take down. So we have to get the ice ready for the ice rink. So, yes. So the reason we're suggesting waiting is not a full year. So we would apply for the OSLAD in August, September. So usually they announce OSLAD grants. We don't know exactly when, but they say between June and July. They're due in middle September, end of September. So we couldn't even go out to bid for courts until after it was submitted and in. So that means we can't go out to bid. That means we won't even be able to start mid-October. And we know the weather in this region, we won't even be able to start construction then until October, may not even be able to do the asphalting and the color coating until next spring. If we waited, if we applied for the OSLAD in September, held off on doing any pickleball courts till the next, the spring, not the fall. So that's really the same time we'd be still finishing construction. We could start on the pickleball courts immediately. So what we're saying is, if we did the two tennis court locations this year and then next spring do the pickleball locations, if that was towards us, that would be our recommendation.
Bart, I'm sure you have some views on this topic. I'd love to hear what you think.
Okay, so at least I'm glad you've described it. So your thought is, as I understood it, do two tennis court locations this year, and you're thinking, two tennis courts this year, and then two pickleball next year, assuming we get the OSLAD grant. Right.
Well, the board hasn't decided if they want to do the pickleball courts. I guess we have to have that. So we're recommending two courts to be done this year, two sets of courts. So say if the board is in agreement that Watson Central will remain tennis, then we would do those this year. And if the board decides the other two courts will be the following spring, if it's pickleball combination of tennis, we would do that next spring and still be able to apply for the OSLAD grant.
But this evening, do we just need to decide if we want to do, for example, the tennis courts, probably Central and Watts, and then once we get an OSLAD grant, then decide what we do about pickleball?
If you're applying for the OSLAD grant, we have to know that the board's in consensus, which they have been in the past, and we've done community comments or community input for 2 years. So if you're going to go for Watts, that's included in that one for the OSLAD grant.
So the two pickleball locations would clearly West School would be one of those as you diagrammed.
Correct.
In the material, and then it's plus one other location.
If you wanted to, yeah, the other location.
Okay.
Okay.
Two locations decided tonight for pickleball, or just
we don't.
So West would be the only one you would have to make a decision on tonight that we would like to. If we get the OSLAD grant, we want to do the renovation.
Yes, if you wanted to. Well, we don't have to make the decision technically tonight for OSLAD. That's not coming out until June or July, so technically we can wait till that time to make the final decision on that. But if the board's ready to make it on what you want to do with the courts, that's fine too. But doesn't have to be tonight.
So,
if you want to kick that can down the road, you're more than welcome to.
So if I said, I would like to approve doing Central and Watts tennis courts at this meeting tonight, and I would also support the redoing or doing two pickleball courts at West, then that's, you don't need anything more this evening, is that right?
No.
Okay. Right.
If you wanted to talk about, if you wanted to do some at Shelton, you could talk about that also. It's up to you.
I think, if this is all we need to do, I'd probably focus on that.
Jordan, what do you think?
I'm definitely supportive of holding off the OSLAD grant. I'm still torn on where the best place for pickleball would be. Someone's not going to be happy regardless of whichever way you vote. Personally, I will vote the majority of the board, as long as it makes sense, which I'm assuming it will. But part of me thinks that Shelton is the best, but then I'm trying to picture West in my head and how it would work and how many courts we're going to get West to create a wall.
Are there pickleball lines at West today?
Yes, there's pickleball lines at West and Shelton.
Got it. Okay. So there is some pickleball activity there.
Correct.
Probably measure, but there is some.
Yeah.
So I guess the question I have is, and probably at this point, I guess, if we were to dedicate, instead of having temporary or joint courts, every courts, if we just have dedicated courts at West, I mean, how much is that expected to increase traffic, play, activity, noise, etc.?
Good question. I think the best way to highlight would be I would expect it to increase visitors based on kind of the place or AI data that we've shown. I think the number of more visitors you get is going to be directly correlated to how many ports you put in.
Right.
So I think sort of make of 6, 8, 10 ports, you're going to get a lot more visitors than if you put in two to meet, you know, a smaller community's both standards and, you know, needs for recreational play.
But would we expect, you know, granted right now pickleball is, I don't know, bigger. Do we get more use for pickleball versus tennis at these locations?
Yeah, I don't know if you can speak to that from a Red Bull or programming side.
Definitely the permitting side is pickleball is very popular. I would say West has a large groups that meet regularly on weekends to play in larger groups. Tennis is popular, but again, it's normally two people playing. Pickleball tends to be larger groups.
Right.
So it's a little bit of apples and oranges.
So if we go and we say, all right, now we're going to convert, we have two dedicated. Let's say we're looking at usage for pickleball, everything go up, but maybe would it be conservative, or would it say 30%, roughly? I don't know if you have projections of like a percentage of increase.
I think if you put in two courts, you avoid some of those larger groups
right.
gathering for larger competitions or
yeah.
round robins or whatever they might play. It probably is a little more localized for smaller groups. I think if you were to put in a 9-6, you would see an exponential increase in traffic given that we don't want to pick up all big social activity.
I think if you wanted to look at that Fixer AI location like Click Park and Glenview has 6 pickleball courts and 2 tennis courts and 20,000 visitors, West Park that has 2 pickleball courts and 3 tennis courts and 9,000 visitors. So kind of using that to see how much of an increase it would be, again, just kind of shoot a little bit from the hip, but
well, and none of us can guess, obviously, but I'm wondering if we were to get used for it, if it's already got used for pickleball, I'm just wondering how much more use it's going to really impact if it becomes a dedicated side, especially if the majority of the current use of it is already pickleball. So, I guess that's where I'm in support of it for West. That's the case that it's already getting used out of it. I guess the consensus of the board we have to come to is how many more courts beyond that we want two more Shelton or whatever. And that's the other part where I'm torn is because of the noise factor, because of parking, the use of facilities for that sport, how much is it going to impact other neighborhoods versus if you just put it at one? Does it make it better for the two and spread it out? I mean, that's where I guess I'm kind of torn with it, but those are my thoughts.
One question, if I could, at least I think you answered this already, I didn't write it down. When would we expect to get an answer on the OSLAD application?
This year they got announced in January.
Okay, so potentially in January.
Next January.
So 11 months from now, we might get an answer. I guess one thought is, if we don't get the OSLAD grant, then we don't have funding for the pickleball courts at West, or we might find an alternate.
We have funding right now to do. We already passed in our capital projects budget to refurbish all 4 courts because all 4 of them need it. So we have the funding already.
So we know one way or another we'll get pickleball courts at West in a permanent.
If the board decides that, yes.
Okay,
correct.
If the board decides
correct.
That.
Correct.
Okay, so there's no need. Okay. Yeah, I just didn't want it seems you could say potentially you don't have to make a decision until 11 months from now about where to go with the next pickleball.
Correct. Yes. The decision we need tonight is which two to do this year.
Right.
Definitely, without a doubt. And then we can.
So, yeah.
Talk about the OSLAD applications too, if you want to include that as an amendment, continue to include it because we have in the past 2 times.
I'm good. Well, Central and Watts tennis court.
So you're at Central and Watts, is that what you said?
Central.
Okay.
Yeah, Central and Watts.
For tennis?
Yeah, which is.
Okay.
We seem to make. Yeah, there's four courts at Central. Yeah, in Watts, there's two tennis courts.
Correct.
So I think that there's, and I agree, consensus to move forward with Watts and Central as tennis courts to increase our chances of getting a grant to support our West School project. I am supportive of increasing access to pickleball, given the demand in the community. I just think, I would say at this time, I don't think that there's an appropriate location for a significant number of additional courts, given the traffic and noise concerns. I know we don't have to make that decision tonight, but I do think that, you know, should we move forward, look for some sort of compromise where we're not changing the dynamics of the neighborhood by adding pickleball, whether that be significant noise or significant new traffic, but I am supportive of the pickleball community. So I think, Lisa, since we only have to make the decision tonight about resurfacing and realigning two courts, and we know we want to go for the OSLED grant, even though we're not making that decision tonight, I think that's all the information that you need today.
Yes, are we in consensus?
I mean, I am, but I do feel like we're going to keep having the same conversation and we should commit and move forward. And, you know, this is a big need and want in the community. This isn't one person to watch pickleball. So, to me, this is a good resolution. We should commit to where we're putting the courts. Because now we're, you know, you're just, we're just saying, oh, okay, well, we're just doing nothing. And that's, I don't think that that's where we should be. I mean, it's been, you know, years we've been having the same conversation. So.
Well, I will respectfully disagree that we're doing nothing. We're moving forward on kind of narrowing down our choices. Pickleball is incredibly important to the community, and I don't think anyone's saying it's not. I think we are a community of extremely tight resources where people want the recreational facilities and the infrastructure of a bigger city without having to put land or financial there. So it takes us a little more time to get there. A dog park or a pool or free beach, you know, it sometimes takes us a little longer. We do have a pickleball solution, a seasonal pickleball solution for the top park. We do have the lines are going to stay at Shelton and the lines are going to stay at
Correct, until they're renovated,
so,
yes.
So, you know, I feel like you're painting this as if we have nothing. I agree with you, the decision, we will have to come to this hard decision, but I think, you know, crawling, walking, and running is probably appropriate for community outside. So I'm okay with it, knowing that we have options in the interim, but I agree with you, Stephanie, we are going to have a serious conversation about what we cannot answer questions, so I think the hand is up. But I think we need to, you know, think about, we have to do this methodically, and if we're making baby steps there, I think we'll get there.
I hope that we get there, because we don't have any formal courts as we know, and it is different. It's just, it's not the same as the other thing. We're going to then bring more time to review those, and again, not have that answer. So, at least if we, you know, can we commit to the West Coast as that grant with the pickleball courts in that at least is a step forward.
I mean, I think the timing of going for the grant keeps us from officially making that decision until then.
Are we? You could do it.
You can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
In order to complete the OSLED grant, which is worth how much again? Possibly
$600,000.
$600,000 is a lot of time. It's a lot of money. But $600,000, in order to do that, we would have to put the application in and effectively have this be the first permanent pickleball we can make that decision today. When is the last time we can make that decision?
Whenever they announce the application, so I'm guessing that's in June or July.
Okay, so while we can make that today, we do have time.
Correct.
Okay, that's okay. And I just want to put it out there. I'm not saying we shouldn't. I just don't. The option is to do it tonight. The option is to do it in a month.
I don't know what this place is. Why, unless there's just not consensus that we can make that decision, but we've talked about this for over 2 years.
Well, we haven't talked about it in connection to the OSLAC grant, unless I know. We haven't talked about it as the sort of hook for the OSLAC grant, because if we end up saying, okay, let's go build it at Shelton Park now, right? Let's say we all agree that Shelton Park is where we want to build it. I'm not saying we're going to, I'm just hypothetically, if we want to do it there, then we have, from what I understand, reduced our likelihood of using pickleball as a hook to get $600,000 from the OSLAC grant. And that's something that's sort of new to me that I'd like to ponder over. But if everyone else wants to make a decision,
that's correct.
That's
so what we've always said is that every new amenity that we do not have in the district, so we've talked about this every time we talked about this OSLAC for less, gives you more points. So that's why we were going to put in the walking path, ADA improvements, the pickleball court that's not there. I think they're shuffleball.
Artificial
turf. Those are all new amenities that we don't have. So every time you put a new amenity that is not in the purchase system now, increases your chances. And we might make it very clear that this is going to be a very competitive OSLAC cycle. There's much less money available and everybody going for it, so I'm going to put that out there. I would also ask the board, if something is stopping you from making a choice on pickleball, is there more information that you want from staff to present to you in a future meeting?
I guess I have a question, and just in terms of thinking about going forward, are they continuing to develop new noise mitigation technology? Is this something that you expect will evolve over the next year, or is this?
I don't know.
I think in terms of the paneling is kind of the stopping noise from attempting to mitigate noise from leaving the court. There are this new equipment technology that produces less noise, but we cannot guarantee that that's going to become commonplace or widely accepted as the new equipment. Mm-hmm. I do know that they have endorsed some equipment that has lower, noise production. But again, you can't control whether or not that person is going to purchase that equipment, if it's going to become the standard, or if it's going to come and go.
And that'd be too hard for us to police. We can't say you have to use this equipment, because how would we police that?
And then if I understand, the considerations around the courts are not just this, what is it called? Yeah, started with an A.
The acoustic block?
Acoustic block, but it would be also be the arborvitae. Is that just like a visual, or is that also?
It'd be both visual and additional buffer to produce that. You can imagine that a certain amount of noise is still passing through or around, it would potentially, reduce that a little further. Also, with a bit of better aesthetic feel from the outside, you'd be looking at our bodies for a tightly planted head door versus just a flat green screen.
And we've seen success at Weinberg Ice Rink. We have, the dashboards, and we have a very mature arborvitae line that helps mitigate the noise for both hockey and the ball.
So I guess in terms of consensus, though, just trying to gather that for tonight, I know, Stephanie, you have some concerns about having a plan. Are you supportive of this year resurfacing Watts and Central as tennis courts? Is that at least like one area where we have consensus on before we tackle the other items?
It's not going to matter if it's just me anyway, but
yeah, I'd like to hear.
I'd like to not do two if we can't at least commit to one pickleball. It's just, again, it's a community want and need we've heard for a long time. And just like the last practice, I go to the restaurant three times a week, I love it. and I very enjoy it, but it's something we can't give the community. This is something we can give the community, and it's time. So, if we can't do it, then maybe we just do one and we hold that money until we know about the offset grant. But I'm not in favor of just doing two tennis and that at least committing to us.
Okay, so I think a lot of us are probably ready to commit to West, but I guess for the sake, before we get there, I just want to make sure I'm reading the room correctly in terms of consensus. Jordan, Bart?
I just want to make sure Michael had a really good point, which was, would approving West, does that in any way reduce our chances, as you said, of getting the OSLA grant? And your point was, we have to approve it before we apply.
No, I mean, we would have to approve it. You're going to approve the whole OSLA package before we submit.
Right, inclusive. Okay.
Right, so you're going to approve it.
So there's no risk that by approving pickleball West tonight, that doesn't in any way cause risk in our...
No, that helps us, because we're going to have that as part of the OSLA package, so it actually helps us.
Yeah. And if I understand correctly,
right? Like I'm probably with you as well. But you got two choices. We got three choices. Choice one, we can approve just the surface and the tennis courts tonight, and nothing else. Choice two, we can go forward and say, hey, look, we want to do West, and we're going to submit West as part of the offset grant. Or choice three is, we can say we're going to revisit what we want in the outside grant next time. So choice one is do the surface courts, be done, move on. Choice two is approve the permanent at West with the outside grant. Or three is let's just revisit everything.
And I guess I would say is that if we have consensus on going for the OSLAD grant, which I think we do, that doesn't mean that we're getting the OSLAD grant, which means if we don't, we would have to reapprove the project again.
That's right.
So we can't absolutely commit until the OSLAD grant process is over.
You can say even if we don't get the grant, we already have funding for it anyway.
Yeah. Well, I think we already approved the funding, or we've discussed that we have the funding available.
Commissioner Boren's correct. If you could say we're committing to do pickleball at West, and if we get OSLA grant, great, that helps fund the rest of the park because that's the thing. But we already have funding for things, but that does not prevent you from saying today, yes, I want to commit to two courts of pickleball at West.
So how would that work? Would that be in a resolution that you would do all that you're committing already? Because I feel like then you're committing funding for something where you don't necessarily need the funding,
but we do need the funding. Remember that the West OSLA grant is not paying for the whole project. It's only paying for a portion of that. So
it wouldn't be like we're
absolutely
appropriating
not
money and then canceling.
No, because we still that only is going to fund probably 45% of the project. So we absolutely, the money that we're going to earmark for pickleball will still go to West. The other part of the OSLA grant that we're getting will go to other parts of the project.
Okay.
So yes, you could approve tonight that we want to make a commitment that we want two pickleball courts at West, whether we get the park grant or not. It's just when we do those.
I think for me, what I want to understand is from other people here, the board members, Shelton seems like a nice ideal space for the court to me in some opinions. So I'm trying to figure out, are we doing West and kind of discounting Shelton because West has this $600,000 in it that can make it even better than we could have done at Shelton? So I guess the question is, I do not necessarily mind moving forward and saying we will submit an OSLA grant with pickleball at West. If we do not get the OSLA grant, my thought was you're kind of back to the drawing board where the park district is funding it and then we have the conversation we want to do West or Shelton.
Or both.
Or both. Sorry, there. Or both. And that's why I'm not certain I feel comfortable going at least at this jurisdiction, at least at this time, because I want to think about it a little bit more. I'm not certain I feel comfortable saying to hell or high water for any West. West with the outside grant, I feel pretty good about. I don't know how I feel about West without an outside grant.
I think I'm supportive of West because the school district is, and I think that we've had public hearings on it with pickleball, and there's been kind of consensus about it. For me, if we do anything at Shelton, I'd like to see what it looks like. I'd like to see which courts. I'd like to see how, like, a map of, you know, what it would look like, what the soundproofing would. Okay, thank you. is the tennis court closer to the houses?
I mean, that's the way we would like it.
Yes, that's what we would do. The tennis courts would definitely be closer to the houses. We are personally not recommending B or C because of the increased traffic that would come. We have a very small parking lot in that park. It's used for, we have the playground, we have the community garden, tennis court, so we think that's too much traffic and too many courts and too noisy for that location. So staff is recommending A. If you were to put pickleball courts, we would definitely put the tennis courts closer to the house. From, I think, center court to the nearest house is about 125, 35 feet to their property line. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that maybe there's a couple questions to ask. Like, do we feel comfortable with West plus Oswald? That's question one. And then question two is, do we feel comfortable with West or courts without Oswald?
I'm comfortable with West.
With or without Oswald?
You said the school districts in support. I mean, that's a big thing. I mean, if we're gonna wait for the Oswald grant, I'm in support of approving the two tennis courts at Watts and Wilson Central, and then waiting, you know, and approving for West for the Oswald grant. If we don't get the grant, I'm still okay with support for West because we were gonna do it if we got the grant anyway. So why deviate from that? That's my opinion on it. In terms of Shelton, I'm not fully against or fully opposed, but I would say I would start with West and go from there.
Yeah, I completely agree with every point.
Okay, so Lisa, I think we have this year consensus to move forward with Watts and Shelton, or not Shelton, Watts Central as tennis courts, but we'd like the community to know that we're committing to the two pickleball courts at West.
Perfect. And then for later consideration, we'll talk about Shelton, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I don't see the reason to need to make the decision about Shelton tonight.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you, everyone, for a thoughtful discussion. We're going to move on to the rest of our agenda. You're welcome to stay. Or do what you please for the evening. Thank you for your input.
Thank you so much.
Read all of the emails and take it into consideration. Lisa and Bobby are going to talk about a discussion on the beach pass model.
Okay. Can you come up to the microphone? Thank you all for coming.
So SNAP has received some high-level results from the community survey. Obviously, we got the questions about beach house model. That we had discussed with the board after the fall. So, obviously, we asked in the survey to the beach pass holders in the fall, and it was 92% were in favor of keeping the existing model. Of the actual community survey that we did to the whole community, 76% are in favor of the existing beach pass or holder model. We've also seen in the memo staff's recommending keeping increasing beach pass prices to $12 and $24 for the daily admission. Excuse me. So that would be an increase of $2 for admission. And that would make a break even at 3 visits for the pass. We also, as we talked in the last meeting, explored a partnership with the Explore More Illinois program, which is the museum pass. So with that, people from will be able to use their library cards, they'll be able to check out the daily admission to the beach. And we'll also be able to limit that to a specific number per day, per week, per month, or based on number per person. We were recommending a pilot program for this year of 15 libraries. We would do it probably in the 15 communities surrounding like that don't have access to the beach or to their own beach. This is kind of in line with our values in the community of providing access to people who don't have access, share like those resources. So we're just asking for board consensus and pushing forward with that.
Do you know how many people are in that program?
Like how many libraries?
Like how many, yeah, or how many people register for it? Like what?
Oh, so they just go to the library. I don't know if you've ever been to Glencoe Library where you can go check out.
I checked out, I'll give you an example when I first moved here. I didn't know if I wanted to join the Museum of Science and History. So you go to the library, you can check out, it's like checking out a book. You give your library card, and they give you an MSI pass. You go to the museum, show them a pass, use it for the day, and you come back. They limited it to, like, I think, 2 per season or something like that, which is a great way to explore it. So
we can pick all of that information. We can be very specialized in terms of what libraries are applicable. You have to have a library card to actually check it out.
Okay.
And then we can say, you know, limited to one household, one visit per year. You can say this library can have 10 visits per month for its residents. So you can be very specific and get that data retroactively after the season.
So the library gives it to the person, the patient. And the patient gives it to us, and then are we able to identify their information at all?
So we're not able to see the actual person. What we can do is see data on how many people from what library takes it out. You will, though, have to have a library card. So the library has the access to the information, but for confidentiality reasons, obviously not going to share names and addresses. But so from a safety point of view, you would have to register with your library within that community or through a library program to pay taxes to a library.
Yeah, I was just thinking about safety issues. So, like, when someone buys a day pass, do we take their information?
No.
We do not. The only information we have on that would be zip code, so we can run reports on where that person's zip credit card is registered to, so then we can track, hey, we're getting visitors from the next community, but we have no information on who it is. We did during COVID have that ability when we sold day passes online, but we don't do that right now.
This provides an awesome way to do social equity. Within communities, so that's one of our pillars, right, is social equity. So this allows us to be able to do that.
I think I love everything about this. I think it's great.
I do too.
So one question I want to go back to is someone has to see this pass, you know exactly who they are. They show up, you understand the family, and the whole thing. Or they're guests of a certain
person.
But if someone buys a day pass, which they can do right at the beach when they arrive, then do they pay by cash or credit card, or is credit card?
Just credit card.
It is. So you do get some information, at least have a name of the person.
Yeah, we tend to not get that information or look at that information. So yes, technically we collect it. We don't dive into who the people are.
Yeah, the credit card, the you know, you depending on your processor, you can get additional information. You can require them to give their address. But there's a couple things. Normally, I can give you my credit card and you go there, and we have no idea if you're Bart Schneider or Sigmund Lugan.
Right, right.
But your processor can give you more detailed information if you absolutely need it, and it doesn't. There's always rules called PCI that have PCI stands for.
Is it a card industry?
Yeah, but there's PC, personal contactable information that is federally regulated on this one.
So I guess with my lead, I'm a safety freak. So my other question is, so I feel safer with the season passes or Glencoe residents who buy day passes, but I guess there's going to be some exposure that people buy day passes, we don't really know anything about them, or they get them from the library, but it's not a free time, it's not a weekend.
Bart, can I address this one?
Yeah.
I totally understand your concern for safety, but I'm going to challenge you on this one because anybody can come in and walk in and buy a season pass today, tomorrow, online. We don't know anything about them. So if there's someone that wants to come do something nefarious at the beach, they could come on a Friday afternoon, buy a season pass, walk through the gates, and do anything. So having this social equity pass system is really no different. We have to realize that there is an element of risk going to a public beach, right? There's an element of risk coming to the community center. So what we are doing, because we have the same concern, obviously we see it almost now weekly, Kansas City, they have a parade, and there's nefarious people out there that will do bad things. So what we're committing to, and we already have, is that we're increasing our safety training at the beach. We have a gentleman who did all of our safety for our comprehensive plan. We've already signed on with him to do safety training for early childhood. We're going to move that to the beach and day camp also. We're going to have him do a safety audit to help us figure out how we can make it safe. So I think we're kind of barking up the wrong tree if we're worried about who's going to get a pass, because anybody can. We allow non-residents to buy passes. And if someone really wants to hurt us at the beach, that's not going to stop them. They're going to buy a $35 pass, and they just bought a $1,000 gun. What's going to stop them? $30? I mean, just being honest.
And they don't need a pass to do swear anything.
Yeah, they don't.
Okay, and actually, thank you for being my personal psychiatrist, Tommy. One place that takes me, though, is I love walking down along the edge of the park, Lakeland Park, and looking down and seeing the beach, but it also looks like somebody could just walk right down there. What are we going to do in the summer, like on weekends, to make sure people
are I think, my kids get dropped off at Central School every day, and there's 500 kids that stand outside of Central School every day.
Yeah.
What are we going to do to stop that? What are we going to do to stop it up here? I mean, I don't mind having this conversation. I don't love having this conversation in light of a social equity in letting people access our beach that don't have the financial means to do so. And I don't mind this conversation at all. I'd love to, if we want to make this an agenda item for safety in general, I would say we put that in the next committee meeting and move on. But this conversation is I'm struggling with the
I'm good with the social equity side of that. I think Kyle can tell me in 10 seconds. Is there any restriction for people walking down from the park to the beach in the middle of the park? And you can just say yes or no.
I'm going to answer that because it's hard for people. There's a lot of growth.
Yeah.
It's not easy. Can they, if they want to make them through trucks? Absolutely. Do we have staff when we're open, operating hours, at the top of the bluff, at the ticket taking and both sides? Yeah. So, yes, we do have eyes on it.
Okay.
But we also, can I say no one will ever? They can also come along the beach and jump over the fence and get in also. There's always an element.
I just wanted to get the answer, so thank you.
It's not a complex answer. Because we've dealt this as far as people trying to get in for free at the beach for years.
Yeah.
And the staff has been, especially since Bobby's gone here, the amount of people sneaking in has drastically gone down. Are we to zero? I wish I could say no, but we're drastically down.
High school kids will do it. We're going to try and do it. Look, if nothing stops someone from launching a canoe at Del Street Beach and coming right into our front beach line and having challenges, right? Like, our beach is not a fortress.
I wouldn't even think you want to do this, and I am playing with you, and I just
no, I mean,
I'd rather not.
I was asking for a different reason. I was asking for the safety of the patients, because, like, when you go to a pool, they know their name and that you were there. So I was thinking of it from that angle.
Drowning or something?
Yeah, because, like, let's say someone calls and says, well, my son was there. Well, we don't have a record that makes you, so that's why I was asking that question, because like when you go to a pool, they grab your North Park, even in the daytime, they take my information. So
do they?
Yeah. So that's why I was just wondering, I never asked that before, but that is, this made me think of that.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we want to do that, but that's where my mind was, like knowing who's there for that reason.
That's a tricky one. We have a lot of those challenges with boaters going out, coming in, you see them last. It's almost impossible to track. I don't see how we could do it. I think Northwood is one of the only pools that does that.
Yeah.
Most don't track that. We have the challenge of, you know, we're open before 10 a.m. so the public people go out. We don't know if they come back after. I would tell you, emergency protocol though, if somebody is missing, you could water, you know, start to go down and we'll contact emergency services after 2 minutes. So we do have protocols in place, but I think it's not realistic to think we're going to be able to track everybody.
And from a safety standpoint, it's an open space, it's a public space. You can't fortify a position unless you're going to turn it to Normandy Beach post, you know, D-Day. I mean, it's just impossible. All you can do is take the proper measures for staff training. Public has to take their own measures and do situational awareness training on their own and be in charge of it. There's just certain places where they can be in charge of your own safety to a greater degree than others. It's not an infrastructure building, it's an open space. So, that being said, I like everything that we've done in terms of what Lisa just mentioned for increasing our safety and our resilience at the beach. I like this new pilot program. I'm curious to see how it goes. I'm curious to see how it's utilized.
Uh-huh.
And we'll be able to have utilization numbers and everything, and we'll buy different areas that buy different libraries, which I'm very intrigued to see. I'd love to see which libraries we're going to do. So yeah, I like it. Curious to see if it's something to move forward.
We also, I think it's in the memo, I failed to mention the legislator's office, or the legislators, we're going to provide family passes to them, and they can then those out to the constituents as well, obviously the limited numbers.
Thank you, Bobby. Do you have everything you need from us?
Are you okay with we're raising the fee just slightly for the daily passes? What we're trying to do is make the beach pass, I guess, attractive to people. If they buy a season pass, it pays off in 3 visits, and that's our goal for that. So that's what we want to do.
I think the economics make sense, and I want people to have access to it.
Agreed.
Great. Thank you. That's great feedback. Thank you. Good questions. Very good questions.
All right. So I think we're ready to move on to the financial report. John, would you like to share your synopsis of the report?
Thank you, President Spang. So, Amazon won't get into too much detail on this month's financial report. Just will point out, obviously, we're preparing the close of our fiscal year end, so we're getting ready to put our books for the year. Obviously, reminders for 2019 is our fiscal year end. Just a few things to point out on the January financial report. We can see that the beach is about $25,000 of the total expenditure, so that's just since our past revenue came up a bit short this fiscal year compared to our budget, came up a bit short, so we were hoping that it would be near break even, and I think we're still trending in that direction. beyond that, our rec programming is right around 50% where compared to what it was last year in terms of overall margin. So no significant variation from that standpoint. Property tax revenue continues to come in, and as a reminder, the second installment was delayed, and that's kind of reflected in the rec admin takeoff and corporate admin departments. So if there's any specific questions on the financial report, I'd be happy to address those.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to move on to, we're going to do the executive director report.
Excellent.
Okay, thank you.
So you might have received this in your mailbox today. It's the brochure came out today. That's our, 0.500 indie race, which was adorable if you guys didn't see that. So great job. Kudos to all the staff, that their hard work on that, developing the programs and putting it together and proofing it. It's a whole team effort, so we look forward to that. So registration starts March 7th for our beach passes, and non-residents can start on March 11th. Camp has already begun, so you'll see some of those numbers coming in. So that's going well. The staff had an excellent time at conference. Thank you, Bart and Jordan, for both attending on Saturday. We appreciate it. And they came back with a lot of good ideas and attending educational sessions and networking. AI was a big topic at conference this year, so and there'll be much more discussion on that so coming up. So we always appreciate the board's support in attending that conference. The in the agency showcase, the website won first place, so kudos to Erin and Ashley. So that was very exciting. That's some stiff competition, so we appreciate that. Other than that, is there any other questions? The other thing is we are going for reaccreditation, so IAPD reaccreditation. What does that mean to you? Lots of review of policies. So we'll be bringing to the board, we have to do a 5-year review on all of our policies, so that'll be the personnel, full and part-time, that'll be the policy, the board policy manual, that will be the administrative manual, the financial manual. So we're gonna slowly, maybe sometimes not slowly, be giving you those, and then we'll highlight any major changes in them. Most of them, there's not a lot of changes except for the personnel. We've added some more benefits to staff, and that will be outlined. So we'll be rolling those out within the next couple months to get those approved and moved on. So that process takes, we've already started, it takes about a year, and we look for reaccreditation in fall to shift for that. So that requires usually about 3 executive directors and 3 commissioners come to our site and review all of our records and take a facility tour, so it's very comprehensive. We are one of the, I think there's only about 10% in the state that are accredited, and we're one of those, so we're very proud of that fact. Other than that, any other questions from the report?
Did Adam have his baby?
He did. Adam had a little baby boy, and I forgot his name. I just heard from him today.
Gavin.
Okay, I saw him in the hall today, and I heard people talking to him, and I didn't know if I could say congratulations or not.
Yes.
Okay.
He did have a little boy, and he's doing great. I talked to him today. He sounded very tired. So, number 3. 3 boys. Valentine's Day baby. He's a cutie.
Can I ask a non-animal question?
Sure, you can.
Bobby, the camp projections are superb.
Ridiculous.
I was running with typo.
No
very strong enrollment is just for me. Obviously, as we talked about before, we really made it a point to make it easy for people to sign up with deposits. Just exceptionally strong. Seeing a lot of strength in Sun Fund Camp Adventure, especially around Action Quest.
Yeah, Action Quest is up like 5 times. Then
you did change the grade, remember?
Right. Yeah. I know we swapped them, but like you still have 2x the number of total projects. But our plan is, if this signups add up to 7, did we? When you say projected revenue to me, that looks like okay. Like we're going to go through all the projected revenue, even though that hasn't come in yet. is this the stuff that hasn't come in yet, or is this the stuff that has come in?
That's what has come in.
Okay, so
like the deposits when you look at the actual forecasting.
Okay, this could even itself out. We could have taken 2 weeks, we could have taken a lot earlier this year and on less later on. Okay.
I think we pulled a lot of revenue forward. So
that
to me is people signed up early. We made it easier for them. The game on was more flexible.
Yep.
We gave a lot more options there. And I think there's also excitement from some of those Sun Fund Capital Venture kids who are actually, it's more age appropriate and they're pulling forward. And I think that helped too.
Yeah,
so I wouldn't expect to see large enrollment between now and summer. We collected almost
all of it.
We will go on a kindergarten look to have 4 groups, which the largest we've ever had is 3.
Okay, yeah.
Which is super exciting for, obviously, for preschool, because then leading into Sun Fund next year, that would be really helpful.
And we have a lot of the GJK kids that come into kindergarten.
And Montessori.
And Montessori.
They have such a great time when preschool days off that they're actually coming to us for the summer.
So when I look at the game on 307 versus 66, that's mostly a 1 week versus 4 weeks issue?
Yeah. Got it, yeah.
Because that was playing out of our base on it, like 25%, and then people are on like 600.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you remind me how my actual bill for camp gets billed to me? I think I just put the deposits at March and it just goes to your credit card.
Yeah, and then it will come out on April 1st and May 1st.
Okay. That's fine. We'll just keep that. Well, we're on the topic. It is nice because it just feels like as a parent, everything comes at the same time. Right, like
December bills,
then, you know, it's like every activity that they're in re-enrolls at the same time, and it's just very, your cash flow is not even, we'll just put it that way.
Well, that was a great suggestion by the board that we were able to implement, so thank you for that.
Okay.
One question, just as Michael pointed out that the numbers jumped, particularly for Action Quest, and in 30 seconds, can you tell me, is it boys, girls at the beach here, what age group? I don't know anything about Action Quest except that it's super popular.
So 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, so that kind of routine group. They traditionally are doing lots of weight counts, activity counts. What they're doing, instead of doing a lot of that, we moved from more of an 8-week and 4-week option to more like tailored, you can pick individual weeks, and that's been a huge hit where they can say, hey, I'm only in town for 2 or 3 weeks, and then you pick individual.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and they tend to do a lot more field trips, a lot more independence, and then we obviously moved the age group up 1 grade this year, so within that, we'll have 2 groups of ages, so we'll have that 5th and 6th and 7th and 8th. Divided up rather than having combined, because there's quite a big maturity difference between those 4 points.
So it sounds, correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like you sort of redesigned the program and shortened it to make it open to more participants, which have arrived.
Yeah,
more. Congratulations, that's fantastic.
I think it was just good feedback. Our team was thinking outside the box too, and that lines up with the school district, which is really important, so it's a little bit more logical.
Great. Awesome. Thank you.
Good job.
Okay, so we're going to move on now to the action items because we still have more to go through.
Wait, there's more.
Yeah, there is more. There is more. We are not done, guys. Okay.
Doing a great job.
So another business. I entertain a motion to approve resolution number 960 for the commitment of $800,000 of the corporate fund balance and $1,200,000 of the recreation fund balance for future capital projects of the Glencoe Park District as presented.
So moved. Second.
Now I can sign this.
Any discussion? All right, all in favor?
Oh,
do I have to do roll call?
No, yeah, do roll call.
Okay, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Porton?
Yes.
Commissioner Kobe?
Yes.
Commissioner Snyder?
Yes.
Commissioner Spector?
Yes.
President Spain?
Yes.
I wish.
Okay.
I thought we approved these in the beginning when we said.
Nope, that was just consent. I should have put them all in our consent.
Okay.
I got them all. Okay, I entertain a motion to approve the acceptance of Midwest Field Solutions proposal for ball field restoration work at Watts Park in the amount of $30,875 as presented.
So moved. Second.
Any discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Commissioner Kobe?
Yes.
Commissioner Snyder?
Yes.
President Spain?
Yes. I entertain a motion to...
Who doesn't it?
You didn't ask me to vote.
Did I? I didn't? Oh, Commissioner Spector? Did I get you, Bart?
Yes.
I just skipped over Jordan?
Just skip me.
I'm so sorry.
I'm just doing
this child.
Okay. I entertain a motion to approve the purchase of one Ford Super Duty Act 250 through the National Auto Fleet Group under Sourceville Contract 091521 NAF in an amount not to exceed $57,000 as presented.
Second.
I think
No, we just did ball.
No,
we just did.
One Jordan.
Yeah.
We just did baseball.
All right, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Commissioner Gobi?
Yes.
Commissioner Snyder?
Yes.
Commissioner Spector?
Yes.
President Spain?
Yes. Okay, guys, focus your voting.
Focus, man, focus.
Please remember. I entertain a motion to approve and authorize the executive director to sign an electricity contract through the NIMEC for electricity services in contract length not to exceed 36 months as presented.
So moved. Second.
Oh, gosh, you guys are fighting over. I love it.
Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Commissioner Kobe?
Yes.
Commissioner Snyder?
Yes.
Commissioner Spector?
Yes.
President Spain?
Yes. I entertain a motion to approve the purchase of three 16-foot by 16-foot cantilever single post pyramid shade structures in the amount of $38,285 as presented.
Second.
Any discussion?
These are the ones for the park that's out here.
Early childhood playground.
Okay.
Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Commissioner Kobe?
Yes.
Commissioner Snyder?
Yes.
President Spector?
Commissioner Spector.
Commissioner Spector?
President Spain.
Yes.
I'm going right on to the next one. President Spain. I accept it.
Okay. Well, you weren't forgotten. I entertain a motion to approve the purchase of one Xmark Zero Turn Tri-Deck Mower through Arlington Power Equipment Incorporated under OMNIA contract 20469 in an amount not to exceed $75,000 as presented.
So moved.
Second. Any discussion?
Did we discuss this one already?
Yeah.
Capital discussion.
Perfect.
All right.
Okay.
Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Commissioner Kobe?
Yes.
Commissioner Snyder?
Yes.
Commissioner Spector?
Yes.
President Spain?
Yes. Lisa, would it be appropriate to address our other business at this time?
Sure. We absolutely can. Okay. We had a request from the Historical Society on signage for the cottage, the Frank Lloyd Wright design cottage. So I'm just going to pass this out to the board really quick, some suggestions. So in this packet is the request made by the Historical Society for the sign to put on the property they lease, not on the building, on the property. So two, three standing signs. And some notes I made in regards to talking to some commissioners about some of the reservations they may have. So just so the board is aware, the language in the agreement with the Historical Society of the lease agreement calls for any signage on the exterior of the cottage must comply with local ordinances requirements, and prior to being erected or installed must be approved by the Parks District. Such approval should not be unreasonably withheld. So President Spain and I have a meeting with the Historical Society tomorrow night to discuss this and the input that you have regarding the sign. I just want to remind you that the Park District Board at the time, under the request of the Historical Society to move the house to the Park District property because of the importance of saving the Frank Lloyd Wright structure, not because of who the owner of the building was. I believe in the signage should emphasize that fact. So in the signage you see, as you can see, they put information about where the cottage was, both the first time and then when it was moved, and then was moved back to the site, our site. I think more emphasis personally should be made on why we wanted to save the house. So one of the examples in the packet gives that kind of language, that it just says the cottage was dedicated by Frank Lloyd Wright, or designed by Frank Lloyd Wright as a temporary home. It was originally built in 1913 on the site of Sylvan Road. In 2020, the cottage was moved to the park and restored to its original design. The cottage anticipates a Unisonian house Wright designed from the 1930s until his death in 1959. The homes aimed at middle-class buyers influenced the low-slung ranch houses that proliferate in the post-World War II Siberia. The signature elements of the cottage design, elements that tie the Wright house later Unisonian houses, include flat roofs, banded windows, and strong horizontal lines. On the bottom, we put formerly Booth Cottage, name was changed, and this is the language they had on the original sign, and it's up for discussion. Because of the irreparable damage to the Glen Close Back community caused by Sherman Booth racist activities in the 20s and 30s, for more information on the cottage, scan the QR code or visit glencoehistory.org. So there is some discussion from the board members that this sentence has said formerly Booth Cottage, the name was changed because of irreparable damage to the Glen Close Back community caused by Sherman Booth racist activities. Some comments were it's too much without telling anything at all. So we're putting a statement there and it leaves it to our imagination what that means. So for example, are people led to believe the racist activities were, you know, burning a cross in the front yard? We don't know what this means, so is this really the best language? So they're summarizing a complex history in this one sentence. And if you're doing this, would it be better off saying Booth had a leadership role in the syndicate that led to Black community having their property rights taken away today? I mean, that's really, I guess, what his racist activities were. Or would we be better off just adding a QR code and that goes to the historical website and their website? Many of the board members believe this will allow those who want more information a direct path to get that information. And if more information comes about, they can add that. Just putting that one line made Lee's confusion. I want to make it clear that all the board members were very adamant that we are not hiding anything. The board members really want is that any interested party individuals get to get the whole story of why the Booth name was changed, taken off the house. I guess we want the individual to read the whole story and be presented with the facts, and they can reach their own conclusion and further their education on Glencoe history. Again, they said that the sign focused on the two prior locations. Don't know why they had to be on the sign. It could be part of the QR code and part of the history. In general practice, the Park District signs are very simplistic in nature, and that's another example I put in the packet, where we usually just put the name of the sign, and then we direct all the information is really come back to the Park District. So this is an example of one that says Ravine Bluffs Cottage. The cottage was designed by Frank Lloyd Wright. We could even add a sign, which I'm sure will come up, that you know the cottage was originally Sherman Booth Cottage or Booth Cottage. To find more information on name change, they could direct them to the QR code and then a name. So what I'm looking for today, I think President Spain is some direction on what we would like to talk to the Historical Society about the signage. If you like changes, if you're fine with the original sign they submitted. They did submit two. One was Frank Lloyd Wright, and it's just about his designs. Again, I don't know why we need two signs out there. This could also be put on the website, but this is just more information on Frank Lloyd Wright and why we wanted to save the cottage. So,
and I would just add, based on earlier conversation we had, if we're going with the statement that our signs are simplistic and that we think it's better to leave off all of the history, that we should say that we only think one sign is necessary versus saying we're going to remove all the history related to Sherman Booth, but we're going to allow the other history. I just think we need to be consistent on that messaging.
True. That's a good point.
What do they have there now?
Nothing. They have nothing there now.
Nothing. Is it only coming about? I should have asked you this, but the other day. Is it only coming about because they changed the name that they feel they have to put a sign, or did they talk about this before that they wanted to?
It was obviously their intention that they wanted to put a sign because it was put in the lease agreement.
Okay.
I don't know if the timing was right now to do it. Maybe in the last couple of years is when they were doing their fact finding, so they didn't want to make a permanent sign until they got all their facts before they put the permanent sign up. When I did talk to the Historical Society, they were a little hesitant to put a QR code, and I think they didn't understand they think it's like, what if that technology changes and then it won't be on the sign? Well, this technology has been around for 10 years, and you know, while it probably will improve, I don't think it's going anywhere soon. What I would recommend is that, you know, if that is their worry about putting a QR code, that we would assist them in making sure the QR code is set up and goes to their website, and make some kind of offer that if this technology changes in the life of the sign, which is about 10 years, that the Park District would buy a new sign, because that's how confident I am that the technology is not going to change. So I think it's important to, first of all, to take our name off the sign above. They have our logo on here. I say take that off because this is their facility and it won't make any confusion. People know the park's ours, which is what they label on here because we have our sign out front. These signs are actually quite big up here. I don't know if you've ever seen our park sign. It's pretty relatively small.
This whole thing would be a sign?
It looks, they didn't give me the dimensions. If I put a copy of the depiction next to the house, it's the first page, shows you the size of the sign. This one right here.
I don't think I have that.
They
didn't copy very well.
I know.
Yeah. You mentioned before that they have a big
park
on the block.
Mm-hmm. It's his biggest lakefront. How about the one that's at the Ravine Bluffs Park sign?
Oh, the informational.
Oh, the informational, yes.
Yeah, the informational sign we have. Okay.
Yeah.
We do have.
Like the new interpretation sign?
The nature.
Yeah, the nature. Yeah.
We do have nature signs.
Yeah.
So I guess, yeah, that's the one counter argument to saying our signs are simplistic, because we do talk about.
Yeah.
And do we have one by the butterfly? Or
we do nature interpretive signs.
Yeah.
I don't know if you would say that's a history sign.
But
so, for example,
it's a more explanatory sign of something in the park.
So, for example, we have the halfway house. That's a historical structure. We don't have a sign explaining the whole history. We have Cauk Park. We don't have a sign explaining the history of Cauk. We have, what's the boathouse name? Or the
Pearland
Beach. We don't have a sign explaining what the history of that is either.
Do we have any signage by the artwork on Connect
Waco? A very small sign. It just has breakwaters with artists, and that's it.
I'll start this off and get us running. I feel like our signage is simplistic. I have no problem with a sign that calls this Ravinia Bluffs Cottage to delineate what it is. You're going to find me hard pressed to do anything more than that. The example that I used with Lisa was, you know, we do not define Duke as the puppy that the park is named after. I don't know who Shelton is at Shelton Park. I don't know much about Watts. I don't know much about anything. I think our signage is simple. It is designed that way. I am 100% supportive of the park, of the Glencoe Historical Society renaming this cottage. I think that's, first of all, they have the right to do that, and they can call it whatever they want. But second of all, I don't think honoring someone who has such a controversial past in our town is something that I stand for, so I'm happy to change the name. But I also think our parks are designed to be a place of play and friendly and enjoyable and not, you know, necessarily a place to learn about history. I think there's a place to learn about history. I think the Glencoe Historical website is a great place to learn about it. I think they have their own building and people can learn about it there. So I would be in favor of a very simple sign with the name.
I'm sure they have the literature and pamphlets like inside, or I know that was the plan at some point to have that. People go inside the building where they can give that information to them.
So I did ask that too. Why can't this information be inside the cottage? They have no immediate plans to open the cottage. They found funding for outside to meet their contract, and it looks very nice. There's been no complaints that the restoration was very nicely done, but they don't have immediate plans probably for the next few years to even open inside the cottage. So that was the answer to that. They don't have plans to do that. That doesn't mean that we can't direct them to the Historical Society building to find that out.
And I had mentioned to you when I saw you yesterday about putting 239 Franklin Road on there, because that is someone's address, and I just think for privacy reasons, because I'm pretty sure that house that's rebuilt has the same address.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I do think that person would not be thrilled about their address on the sign. I wouldn't be, if it were me.
So, can I ask you a question? The very simple sign that says Ravine Bluffs Cottage, and it says like something like the cottage was designed by Frank Lloyd Wright, because that's why we want it there, and maybe something that says originally named Booth Cottage, and then for more information on the cottage, scan the QR code and web. Would that be something that the board is looking for? More simplistic.
How is that different from what is on this page?
That is the one I gave you.
Okay.
That's an example of a possible option.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree with what Michael and Stephanie said. I like the simplicity. I think the most important thing is, yes, a Frank Lloyd Wright cottage, which is why it's there. And then in terms of describing it, I love the QR code, because it virtually takes you out of the park and takes you to the historical site. If you are in the park with your cell phone, you can access anything you want anywhere in the world.
Yep.
If you want to learn about this, it takes you to the historical society. They can say whatever they want.
I like it as well. I would go a step further, and I would get rid of the /cottage and just say more information. Go to historicalsociety.org and let them double click if they have to with the cottage.
Yeah, I like that.
Would you take out? I'm sorry.
Take out the /cottage. Just let them go to the Historical Society and see if they would change that.
Oh.
Whatever.
Yeah, that's
it. I did nothing further, yeah. But people will have to double click to get to it.
Well, I guess, Michael, what I don't understand about that is, do you really not want people to learn about it? Like,
oh,
I don't understand. I feel like you should make it as easy as possible to learn about the cottage. I like the sign. I don't really have a big opinion on what's on it. I just don't want the park district to have a reputation of us looking like we don't want people to learn about the cottage. So if I were to come into that room and say that, I mean, I just feel like it really looks like we're preventing people versus saying this is just a in line with what we do. Like, to me, it's really important that we say this is the style of sign that we want, this is consistent with what we do, versus saying we don't want people to feel bad, or this is political, or we'd rather them not click on the site. I don't want anyone to think that we're in any way I think the best way to approach this is, yes, there needs to be context, just reading that leaves questions and is open to misinterpretation, but I certainly don't want to come across whatsoever as not being supportive of sharing why we approved this cottage in the first place, because it was historically significant. I mean, if anything, I think we want people to think we made a good decision by protecting this Frank Lloyd Wright cottage.
I certainly don't want people to think that we are hiding anything. I also don't want to broadcast anything that's not necessarily in line with the mission of the park district. The mission of the Historical Society is to talk about political history, and they can talk about it all they want, and they should. And we should all be aware of the history of our town and all hope and pray and live lives that do the opposite of what happened here. That is a place for the park, that is the mission of the Glencoe Historical Society to talk about the history. I just don't think it's part of our mission to do that. If they want to put something inside that house, I love that idea. If you want whatever signage that you want sort of inside the house, factual signage inside the house that can be proven, I have no problem with that. I don't think it's, I think if we can tell people, you can go to Glencoe Historical Society to learn more, I have no problem with that. I agree with Lisa, I don't think QR technology is going anywhere, but all of our parks, state, talk about the beauty and the rest and the essence of the parks. If you want to talk about the construction of this house on here, if you want to say, the house was built in this year, it's a unique style, and you want to go on and on, it's sort of an outlier to the rest of ours, not opposed to it, but just doesn't, it's not who we are. We're not the people to go out there. Like the artwork that we have, and that's what I was asking about the artwork in Connecticut, but we don't say anything about the artists, about where they were born and what they
right,
did and
exactly.
How they lived, and you know, I don't think we need to. I think people can go there, appreciate the beauty. If they want to learn more about this, they should. If they want to take a tour inside and the signs are inside, I think they should. I don't think every passerby needs to know. I don't think every passerby needs to be needs to have this information out there.
And then you can use that as an example, that one. And then at Watts, too, like we renamed it, and I'm sure we have a spot for the Weinberg family, but we don't go into any discussion of the name or anything.
I don't know how Mr. Weinberg earned his money or what he did, you know, what
correct.
Good behaviors he did or bad behaviors he did. You know, I don't think that's part of who we are. So that's my two cents.
So you don't want the slash cottage?
No, just let those are society. This way they can learn whatever they want about the history. Whether it's the cottage, and then the Lego Historical Society can say, click here more for the cottage, click here more for this. Let them learn.
I think it's in front of the cottage, so people are obviously scanning to learn about it. So I think it's very appropriate.
I would agree with that. I would say if they want more about the cottage, like what percent of the people are gonna hit the QR code, I mean 5-10%, and then they can read what they want. And they, I agree, I think they want to go to the cottage. Plus,
I'll tell you, I'm nervous that on the Glencoe Historical Society website, it's sort of a generic site. When you go to the cottage, you're really just into the cottage. I would hate for that site, because you can't easily put something more controversial on the second click in that you wouldn't necessarily put on the first click. I hate for them to see that controversial thing on the first click. That's it. When you click on this, imagine it says something like, something horrific, something very controversial. I think you're likely to put that on a second click if you're not likely to put it on a first click. So that's why I think let them go to the generic site, let them click more about the cottage here, let them know.
And also, the one, so I go back and forth here. The other thing, as you point that out, where you click on it, you get to the site, and then you see this negative history explained to some extent that in any event, this was a cottage that was built by a racist who did bad things to Glencoe. And then we have exactly what we don't want. There's anger And it's embodied in this building. This building represents this man. And we don't want people angry, potentially expressing their anger somewhere in the park. I think it's a complex situation, just as an example of the complexity, and I don't want to go any deeper. But this, until 6-7 years ago, this was never Ruth Cottage. If you go onto the site, the 100th anniversary of Wright in Glencoe, which is still up, the historical site they did, this was the summer cottage. It was always the summer cottage. It wasn't a house. The houses had the same name as the building. But this was a cottage. It was always a summer cottage. On their site, they say there were some people who thought it was the honeymoon cottage. It was not. Some thought it was a different cottage. It was not. It was always, always, always. And they changed the name, I think, to Booth Cottage because of that would help, you know, with moving it and preserving it. So there's a lot there. I don't think that will ever be on the site. I would like to accommodate them. I'd kind of like to move on as a district from this, and I appreciate you wanting to do it.
There's no difference to me in my mind putting a QR code out here and putting the exact words that are on the QR code on the sign. Because that's exactly what you're saying, with the exception of the fact that you're saying, okay, this is done by Glencoe Historical Society. So, and I think Bart said is absolutely correct. We should not think of this as a jerk's home. We should think of this as Frank Lloyd Wright built this. And the only link there is because for the past 6 years it's been called the Booth Cottage. I personally think that we would do ourselves better by saying, you want to learn more about the history of Glencoe and this cottage, go to the historical website. And then when you have the historical website, you can click into this. I think it would be better for us to have the first site that someone clicks to as a generic historical society versus, let's just imagine that you click here and now it's a cottage site and the first thing that comes up and says, racist living like, right? And then the actual says, well, I'm going to go racist living Glencoe. But if you click on this and Glencoe Historical Society changes the cottage site to say racist living in Glencoe, that's the first thing you see. I'd much rather you see a generic site because we can't stop them from putting this cottage site to say something like that, but at least it's not the first one. And if you're very unlikely to have your first site of Glencoe Historical Society say racist living in Glencoe, you're much more likely to have a generic site. So that's the only reason. I want people to know the history. I think it's important, and I think it's great that the Historical Society does this. A little bit of friction to get there, I'm not opposed to it all.
Jordan, you want to say something?
I don't think you're going to surprise anyone by telling them that there were racists here or anywhere years ago. So to me, that's irrelevant. I have no problem with the sign personally. I would change that one sentence just because it is like a punch in the face with no context. But this isn't a park sign, this is a history sign. I mean, yeah, we don't know the history of Watts or anyone. Those aren't historical buildings. The whole point of this building is it's supposed to be historical. I personally would call it the Lloyd Wright Cottage or keep it somewhere. I think the name is not my preferred name, but I mean, that's not my call. I got no problem with the context of it. I think it should be more about Franklin Lloyd Wright on the sign. And then to learn more, I have no problem with the first thing they click is about previously owned by Booth, whatever. And I don't care about that. Tell the story. I mean, as a history fan, tell the story. Because you're not going to surprise me personally by telling me, oh, somebody was racist who lived here. Sure, a lot of people were racist back then. A lot of people call it racist today. I mean, the point is, it's history. I don't care how pleasant it is. There's a lot of unpleasant history, so tell the story. I just think my only issue is that one line, and I think they keep it, I'm fine with it. But again, I think there's just, like you just said, well, what was that activity? Was he burning crosses? I mean, you know, you don't know anything, and I would have just simplified it by saying it was renamed because his activities and his impact on Black communities.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my opinion. Again, I don't have any areas in any particular direction that we go. I have no issue with it at all. I have no issue with
click on the link we give, or you scan a barcode, the first thing that pops up is, however the Historical Society wants to present the information on this house is, in my opinion, up to them, and I'm fine with it. But I agree, I think I personally think it should be more focused on the right design and then go into the previous ownership. If they want to start with the previous ownership, that's on them. I have no personal problem with it, but I'm fine with it. I'm actually fine with the sign mostly having more info on it than just like, here's the right house.
I mean, I agree with Jordan when I heard about this. I didn't feel anguished. I felt like, oh, that makes so much sense. It was kind of my reaction. Like, oh, you could totally see that. Or like, when you drive around Glencoe, or that, like, wasn't surprising. This happened in all the North Shore communities, maybe not the syndicate, but some form of redlining or discrimination, whether it be religious or race-oriented. So to me, this doesn't disrupt, make my day worse. It's just more of like, oh, that's like an interesting point. And I think probably the vast majority of people will either A, not read the sign, B, have similar reactions. And if somebody's really upset about it, I mean, there's a lot of things to be really upset about in the world. Something that happened 100 years ago. I mean, there's stuff horrible happening right now. So, not necessarily in Glencoe, but in the world. And it, to me, you can't control what the Historical Society puts on their website. And even if you don't agree with what they put on it today, it's probably going to change. It's an evolving website, an evolving board of directors over there. They're going to have changing viewpoints. We can't really control other people, and we can't control people's feelings. I'm fine with, for me, it's just like if we have the messaging, I want it to be consistent about what we feel about our signs and what they should have versus a statement about what we think should be shared.
Well, if they don't vote for this, which they may not.
Just to put out there, we made it really clear. We're putting a house there and everything else is our approval. So they don't get the option to not go for it.
Well, if it's not an easy discussion, let's say that. Let me kind of say, can we take our signage off of it on top, like you said?
Yeah.
So we're not on it, we need to take that woman's address off of it and really try to get rid of the something from the bottom.
I do not like that. I'll tell you. I think this is the beauty of having a board of five people who can vote on it. I think we already opened up a can of worms by putting the house there, which you remember all those discussions, Stephanie. I would much rather be consistent with our signage, because what's going to happen next is someone's going to say, oh, at this beach, this is where the lynchings occurred, and let's now put a sign up on the beach about it. Or at this place, and I don't disagree, the story should be told.
Well, those aren't leased by the Historical Society.
These are not, this is not a real lease. They're not paying us for it. They pay us a dollar. It's not.
But there's a contract.
There's
legal.
There is an absolute contract. If they want to be on the inside of their house, I have no problem with it. When you're walking by our park and you see inconsistencies in our signage, then someone's going to say, why, where, this happened, or that happened, or this happened, put up a thing. I just feel like it's a slippery slope. So I'm all for calling for meetings about the cottage. I'm all for it. Like Wright Cottage. They have the right to name it what they want to name it. We have the right to approve the signage. So those are my two cents. But you guys, if the four of you feel differently, go for it. This is a democracy, literally.
What if we agreed on something? This is just what if we agreed on something like this, with the understanding that the two of you went and met with them.
and said, you know, we have approval for this, this is what we would prefer, but there's always an understanding you could come back. It's not like, you know, my way or the highway. You know, but this is, the board is comfortable with this. The other thing that Carol said that I really agree with too, I don't want, there's a history that is important to the Historical Society, and I don't want anyone there to feel we are trying to hide the history. And I think there's a lot more there than, you know, comes out right on the surface. But there's a lot of sensitivity to the racism, and it's a topic at the Historical Society. So you can't say, don't talk about the cottage. You know, if they want to talk about it, they can. And again, I still feel virtually they're not in our park if they're on the phone looking at this. But I would, my thought is, because I have a huge amount of confidence in the two of you, that you can get them to agree what we have, or you will figure out something logical that then we can do and hopefully move on quickly.
Hopefully.
I'm cognizant of what happens in Chicago when you want to remove a statue. There's always two people that think different things. When Columbus was removed from Grant Park, or thought that would be from Grant Park, there was issues there. I don't want to get into that here in London, though.
Yeah.
I think the story should be told. I 100% think the story should be told. I'm not certain our parks are the vehicle for that story.
I can agree.
I think you differentiate their side versus the park district.
It's on your property. It's already been a controversial issue that we've moved to our property.
Well,
it's on our property. It's going to be a reflection of us.
Well, Chicago, they have the Columbus statue, and it's already there, so if they leave it up or take it down, it's going to be controversial either way.
But to put the sign without that one line is certainly not any, it's not controversial at all. But it's also not what we do anyplace else. And that's where, so I'm thinking, like, how can we be consistent? How can we be as controversial as possible?
I guess just 2 points on that. We don't have anything else like this, so it's really hard to point to a historical building that somebody else, if somebody agreed to put a sign on it that's Historical Society as at this current time. So it's really hard to make, I think, the consistency argument. You can, but it's a loose one. And I also don't want to say that it's controversial, because I think that we don't want to say that. What's the controversy that people think that his actions were okay? I don't think that. So I think it's just more of people will read this and maybe misinterpret it or react to it. But I guess I would hesitate to say you don't want something controversial, because to me it's not. So you have to have an argument that's not hiding, that is not saying we don't want this to get out, or anything that comes across that way.
I have no problem with the reading of Scottish, I have no problem with the naming. I think it's an absolute right thing to do. By the way, please, I'm going to redact the word controversial and call it somewhat appropriate for us to be the vehicle. I can't think of the right word, but are we the vehicle for village history? Do we want to think about, let's just suppose that in a year from now, it comes out that some of the awful things and horrific things that happened on our beach. What are we going to do then? Are we going to put a plaque up about the beach? Frank Lloyd Wright.
I'm sure there are racist things there.
30 other homes.
We didn't
all
black people on our beach.
Mm-hmm. So I would rather err on the side of let's be consistent, and I don't think it's our mission to teach history. We are certainly not going to hide from it, and this is something that certainly should be known about. And our schools should teach it, Historical Society should teach it. I'm not certain that we need to put that on our
land. Yeah, give me the library too. There's a lot of
libraries.
If something major happened on the beach, and the Historical Society wants to pay to put
take that land over and rebuild the structure or whatever. Or
Jordan, they haven't paid anything.
No, I know, but I'm saying, like, I think you're making a point of, well, what is something terrible happening? I mean, terrible things happen everywhere.
Exactly.
So you pick and choose. Okay, you're saying, what if something that this blue guy did happen over there, or this syndicate or whatever? I mean, you can get all that information on their site. This is your one vehicle to this particular piece of history. Do we have, the other Franklin Lloyd Wright houses, are they currently occupied by people?
Yeah, people live there.
This one is not. This is the one that is reserved for history. So, this is the one that they own.
But Franklin Wright's not the problem. We can spend all night talking about this. I think if the four of you feel differently than I do, then you all should find consensus. I feel like consistency matters, and I feel like the story should be told by the people who own the house inside their property, on their property, through their vehicles, and not necessarily ours, because it's going to end up. We're going to have a conversation 2 years from now. I guarantee something happens on one of our parks, and they're going to say, "Well, you were okay with a sign over there. Why aren't you okay with a sign over here?"
Well, because those parks are not maintained by the.
They're not maintained by them either, guys.
But the building.
The building. They literally do nothing.
And they agreed. I think this is a unique. And I'm not really worried about this happening elsewhere unless we have a similar historical preservation. I understand what you're saying. I'm poking holes in your argument because I have to go present to a group and they are going to present these points.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're absolutely going to present these points. And I just don't think it's a great case.
I think the question we have to ask ourselves is, do we want to be the vehicle, regardless of whether it's a house that's on our property, an event that happened on our property, do we want to be the vehicle to present the history of Glencoe to the residents and to the people who come visit it? And to me, I do not want to do that. I want our parks to be fun and recreational and as you said, there's probably every piece of this town probably has a horrible story to it, and I don't want to be the one to teach it just because this happened to have the name that was put on it 6 years ago out there. I think this Booth guy is, look, the park was given to us by Booth, right? That whole park was given to us by Booth. So, what do you want to do? Do we have a sign saying, hey, enjoy the beauty of this park, but this park was given to us by somebody who did terrible things.
I understand what you're saying, and I guess I just am going to say I respectfully disagree that I think that this is a unique situation that isn't parallel to the other parks.
I don't think anyone knows what that cottage was called. They're renaming it, but there was never a name there. I'm sure it was on their website. It's not now. They call it the relocated Wright Design Cottage. I'm sure maybe at some point they called it that, but like honestly, who's gonna know this was even being renamed? Can't they just now is their naming and they put the name on? Why did they even have to talk about?
Because apparently when they saved the house, that's what the name was. It was Booth Cottage. So now in the Wright, Frank Lloyd Wright world, there's people that are really into Frank Lloyd Wright. It's known as the Booth Cottage. So all the, I guess, people have maps that take them to all the sites in Glencoe. It's labeled as a Booth Cottage. So they have to explain to people that are coming that have seen that. That's why. So my question I'm trying to get at is, I gave two examples of change recommendations. Do Carol and I walk in with both of these and say, here's some ideas. What we want to do is emphasize why the park district agreed to save the cottage, which is more about Frank Lloyd Wright, right? So the example of the sign I gave, and actually got a lot of the wording from Bart, and he got it from our website, which we got from the Historical Society, it kind of spells out why we're saving it. And that's what we really want to get across. At the bottom, It says formerly Booth Cottage, which I think they're going to think is very important, because when people come up with their little maps and say, where's Booth Cottage, they have to have it someplace on the sign. Maybe we, with Jordan suggested, you know, the name was changed because of negative activities impact to the Black community. So we're acknowledging it. And now for more information, go here to find out what that negative activities and impact is. Is that something we want to say or not?
You know how I feel, so.
I just want to know how everybody else feels.
I'm fine with it.
I could go with either one, and I think maybe they may just want you to listen. So they may say, well, now you listen to us, and, you know, okay,
right.
You were nice, and you gave us the lot for $99 for 99 years. We'll go with this one. Yeah. I don't know.
They're not going to do that.
What do you think they're going to want? You don't think they would take either of these two?
I don't know, but. Those two options?
I think we show them the options, we see what their thoughts are, and then we can take their feedback. We come back with one more very minimal discussion on it, and we make a final vote.
Okay.
And then.
So bring both suggestions.
We will not unreasonably withhold something. So in theory, they could take us to court and say we're being unreasonable. I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think
it's going to happen either, but I think they want to negotiate it. What I would recommend is at the end of the day, if we can't come to a conclusion, the village has, what's that?
Diversity and Inclusion.
The
Inclusion Council? Then maybe we bring them into the discussion on that.
I think it's a fundamental question, and it sounds to me like the four of you are on one side, and I'm on the other. Does the Park District want to tell the history of Blair? And if the answer is yes, any of these work.
I think it's too late. I think we put the cottage on the property.
We did in this instance.
The cottage, what Stephanie, I think what you were trying to say, the cottage has so little to do with that horrific individual and his horrific acts. The cottage is not there because of the owner.
Right.
The cottage is there because of the architect.
That's exactly right.
So when you start to push a story, a narrative, because of an owner, I think what you're trying to do is talk about the horrific history of Glencoe, which should be discussed. I don't think the Park District is the right vehicle.
Right. Focus on Franklin, right? That's why we saved the house.
I agree. So you're okay with this iteration saying this is why we saved it? Because to me, this explains it. And then, oh, by the way, it was formerly Booth Cottage.
Right.
And this little mention, negative activities, for more information, just go.
I mean, he lived there, he was his lawyer, but
that's not why we saved the house.
In some ways, having that is better than just going to the website, because then we're controlling the narrative of why we saved the house.
Right. True. So actually, you're right.
Yeah.
It's probably, we go with this and say, we want you to tell the story of why we agreed to save the house.
Right.
And it had nothing to do with this Booth guy at all. It had to do with Frank Lloyd Wright. And I know it was called Booth Cottage, but that meant nothing to me or the board when we saved it. It was because of Frank Lloyd Wright. So you're making this emphasis about Booth, and yes, he was a terrible man, and he did terrible things to the Black and the Italian and the Creek residents of Glencoe at the time, and we don't condone it, and the Park District laws and our values are different than that day, but we want to emphasize this. And if you have to put in formerly Booth Cottage, we don't want to make that the emphasis of this great facility.
Right, I mean, let's take focus now on residents that lived here and then picking on them. We could pick on any resident that lived here at that time.
Yeah.
This is what they did. He was just a resident. He didn't build it.
Yeah.
He was friends with them. He was his
He bought it. I mean, bought the design and, yeah.
That's not.
Sold it 6 years later or something like that.
Roman called it out on the side of one group of people here.
Right.
Yeah.
Other groups than just the Black community. So,
uh-huh.
Again, I do think the focus should be Franklin Lloyd Wright. 100% in support of that. I think that history, that story should be on the website when they click on the little QR code.
Yep.
The rest, again, sure, fall off. Why are we reading? Why is reading? I don't get wrong, but
Okay.
Again, I agree. The focus should be on the house and on Franklin Road right from the city.
Yeah,
But I think there should be more when you click on there. The QR code takes you to the Historical Society website. Obviously, their website, that's their job.
So we say formally Booth Cottage, please, you know, or go to the. Scan that QR code, visit the Historical Society on more information on the name change and the cottage.
If they feel that it has to be on there.
If they feel it has to be on there.
Can you just name it and then they can go for the information? And again, they're giving him more fanfare. Like calling him out and giving him attention. That has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I think.
For me, Plus Cottage, formerly known as Booth Cottage, to learn more. Clicking.
But again, why do we have to say it's formally known as?
Because I think they're thinking people are going to come up and think where's the Booth Cottage? I can't find it. I found the Ravine Bluffs Cottage. Where's Booth Cottage?
I don't know.
That's what they're going to say.
But because there are people out there that have this, I want to learn this is Frank Lloyd Wright. Oh, let's go check out this Booth Cottage at this address. Wait, what's this Ravine Bluffs? So I don't mind saying formally Booth Cottage. I'm indifferent there because that's. That is what it was called. And for more information on the cottage, scan the QR code, and you know what? I'm fine with it. If you want to go to Slash Cottage, I don't think it's the end of the world.
Okay.
I'd rather you go to the
direction.
Website in general, because if you change any URL later on, they want to.
Well, you walked out of the room when we were talking about this. We were actually saying if we leave the paragraph explaining the significance of the cottage, then we're controlling more of the narrative. And people might read that and just stop there.
Then if you're doing that, then no link.
No what?
No link.
Well, no, I think we put a link.
Time out. Your argument is you control the narrative and then you give them a link.
No, I'm just saying that if you want them to understand why we support the cottage, it's because of the historical significance.
I don't know.
And if you have them go to the website, you know, but whatever. I think we're going to disagree on this, so I don't really see the point in dragging it out.
Okay.
So I think we have enough.
I can change this a little bit, and then okay.
So you would just go and talk. You know.
Yeah, we're going to talk.
Anything,
yeah, we're just going to say, you know, well, this is what I'll say. Is I'll have this in my pocket to show them an example, but I'll say, you know, the board really wants to emphasize why we saved the cottage, and your reiteration of the sign. Didn't really adjust why we saved the cottage, which is to highlight this design feature that then, I guess, fundamentally carried on through all these houses throughout the United States. You're not addressing that. Why don't we address this on the sign? And, you know, if you want to talk about Booth on the website or whatever, go ahead, but why are we emphasizing this man? And they'll say, because they have maps and we have to say formally Booth, and then we can suggest lighter language.
So we'd rather celebrate Frank Lloyd Wright.
We'd rather celebrate him. He's a pretty bad man, too.
I think it's more in line with our mission to celebrate those things. We should not hide from the truth. But I don't think the slavery is the story of this park or this house.
Correct.
I'll talk a lot, sorry.
No, that's good. Good discussion. Okay.
But I also do agree with Jordan. I mean, I think it's really irreparable damage to the community, not just the black community.
Yeah.
100%.
Well, they'll say because it's in the deed that you, once they bought them, they weren't allowed to sell them back to black people, but it didn't address Greek or Italian. So that's probably why they're saying irreparable damage.
Okay, whatever.
All right.
Have we seen, other newspaper articles on this and things like that? Is there...
No, they haven't publicized. They haven't publicized yet. They're waiting for us to know about it.
So they do have something. So it's not necessarily widely known in the community.
No.
It's not public information as of this point in time about Booth's history.
I can't answer that. I don't know.
Okay.
I guess we'll learn that tomorrow.
Yeah, I would love to understand that as well. I think we're really careful about. I don't doubt them, but it kind of crossed the line.
If you look at the packet, there are lots of citations.
There's lots of citations. Yeah, there's citations throughout the whole thing. You have to really study that packet.
It's not good that it happened.
It's true. Okay.
Okay, so I think what I'd like to do is move on to executive session.
Okay.
So can you remind me what I need to do?
Do you have your agenda memo? Let me see right here. Okay, so you have to go. This is close.
So I've got to actually recommend it to enter it. Okay. The board will now enter into closed session where no action will be taken. I entertain a motion pursuant to Section 5 ILCS 120-2 of the Open Meetings Act. The board will enter closed session to discuss the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the public body or legal counsel for the public body, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee of the public body or against legal counsel for the public body to determine its validity as mandated by Section 2.065 ILCS 120-2C1. Those present during the executive session will include all commissioners.
Second.
I'm going to record the time at 9:15. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Commissioner Colby?
Yes.
Commissioner Snyder?
Yes.
Commissioner Spector?
Yes.
President Spain?
Yes.
Okay.
I entertain a motion to return to open session.
So moved.
It is 9:45.
Okay.
Do you want a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Bourne? Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Commissioner Colby?
Agree.
Commissioner Snyder?
Yes.
Commissioner Spector?
Yes.
President Spain?
Yes. Okay, can I recommend a motion to adjourn?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, Lisa, please record the time. It's 9:45.
All right.
Hey, guys,